Blog Talk Radio.
Project builders, trying to make a killing to the project, kill him.
bless the Lord's children. God just feels them, trying to make a living in the project building. It's hard just living in the project building, trying to make a killing for the project to kill him.
It's hard when you don't have much, so rush to get your cash up. Yep. You gotta watch for hitting as niggas giving your stash up. Okay. You gotta keep your heat up in the streets so they don't mask up. Yep. You keep something fresh on your feet, they get that ass up. My dudes who ain't make it, crossed by some dudes who had hatred. Huh? So many of us died and I can't take it. Dang. The streets made me tough and the streets made me strong. But the streets took both and the streets took dogs. Yeah. And the streets took man and God, he took my dad. So I put my tears on his pen and his pad. Okay. Oh yeah. I write in my phone, yeah, that's my bad. I gotta give my children a home that I never had. Man, I can't help it, ain't known but a better path. And the fight of the hood, who's throwing a better tab? So God bless our kids and give them the best to live. But rock our first blessings, just let the recession
end. Blessing those children, God just feels them. Trying to make a living in the project buildings. It's hard just living in the project buildings. Trying to make a killing to the project to kill him. Blessing those children, God just feels them. Trying to make a living in the project buildings. It's hard just living in the project buildings. Trying to make a killing to the project to kill him.
Shamako, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, I was like, am I talking to myself? I'm just like a little confused there. Okay. So welcome to the Leopard Carpet with me tonight.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
Well, you know, I appreciate you, you know, being willing to come on to the Leopard Carpet with me, Shamako. I've been thinking about this a lot the last few days. And, you know, speaking to somebody such as yourself, who is a hip-hop artist, who is, you know, big, you know, and working with the Hip-Hop Congress around the United States, to being an activist that speaks amongst, you know, the many, talking about, you know, social issues that our communities, you know, are afflicted with, that this is something very new for me. So just be patient with me, you know, and I may ask a lot of questions. I'm so open to receiving the information and knowledge that you want to share tonight, just not only with myself, but with the listening audience. And there are several people that, you know, did say that they, you know, were going to tune into the show, and several other people are from Hip Hop Congress. But you know, and there are people actually that have been on the line waiting too. So, you know, I gave you the option of being able to play, you know, some music before you came on the show or if you wanted to call in. And I don't know if you paid attention to that first song that I played by the artist by the name of Chaos from the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm. I actually did pay attention to that. I like the song a lot.
So now would you consider that socially conscious hip-hop?
You know, before I answer that question, actually, you had said earlier that you said that this is the, I guess, the concept of, like, hip-hop social justice, it was a sort of
mm-hmm.
a new thing for you?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I would actually like to start, your question is very good at speaking of that. There are a lot of songs that I would include that I would consider socially conscious.
Okay.
And in many ways, a lot of music and a lot of artists that we don't consider overtly political
mm-hmm.
or social in nature, I still very much consider socially or politically conscious.
Okay.
And, you know, kind of the reason I feel like it's connected to the sort of point you made earlier about it being new
mm-hmm.
Is I think the sort of evolution of the relationship between hip-hop and cultural work in general, I think that process is, I think it's been present since the very beginning, and that really we've just seen sort of waves in that evolution as we go generation to generation. So, you know, for instance, we might not consider Public Enemy activists, or we may consider them activists, but we know that, for instance, you know, Barry Allen, folks like that were considered some of the first, what was it, rap activists, right?
Okay.
So I definitely think that that's kind of, even going so far back as Zulu Nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first sort of hip-hop organization to emerge as a force for collectivity and community and anti-gang violence. And even really the concept of the Block Party, right, the Kool Herc, who, of course, is struggling with healthcare issues now, that in and of itself was a community-building exercise. So I would actually say that one thing to consider when we're having conversations about social and political consciousness in hip hop is it's not always just the obvious or the overt. Sometimes it's just the action or the activity itself.
Okay. That's an interesting concept, and I appreciate that because that's right now listening to you is challenging my mind, you know, to further understand, you know, exactly what it is that, you know, that you're saying. So, you know, maybe before we go any further with that, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Shamako? You know, did you start out as being an MC and somebody who was just into, you know, hip-hop, or did you start out in getting involved with Hip Hop Congress? Where is the beginnings of you and who you are today?
I tend to consider my life as an MC and my life as an organizer kind of hand in hand.
Okay.
You know, I started freestyling and writing raps when I was like 8 or 9.
Mm.
I started, you know, I guess what we'll call like student government, right? I started doing that when I was around like 8 or 9.
Okay.
And, you know, did both sort of throughout middle school and throughout high school. Started a hip-hop club when I was in high school.
Okay.
You know, my involvement with Congress came at around 18, 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman by the name of Rial Robinson. I met Rial in San Diego where we were doing a show.
Okay.
And I met Rial actually as an artist. He was filming the event, and he wanted to film our set. And he had this idea for an organization he was working on in Southern California called Hip Hop Congress, and I wanted to bring it to Northern California. And you know, it's sort of evolved since then. Like I said, hand in hand. So they're kind of intertwined, as far as I go.
Okay.
It's very difficult for me to separate my art and my organizing, because they're all kind of part of one whole, right? Which is just who I am.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess that'd be my answer to that.
So when you step out there as an MC, is it always about political and social issues that you rap about, or you know, or is it? I mean, I've heard you do some things that are more of a on a fun, silly side, but is it generally, you know, socially conscious things? And so that's why you say it kind of goes hand in hand.
Great question. I love that. I say it goes hand in hand because, you know, when we look at like the categorization of genres as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the categorization of hip hop in particular into areas like political hip hop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gangster rap, alternative hip hop. These
right.
are a lot of these categories are created by the industry, the music industry, to make it easier to tell what to tell record stores what section to put a CD in, right?
Okay.
Or what section to, you know, put music in so people
okay.
know where to go buy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as reflecting the entire experience of a human being,
mm-hmm.
right? And I have friends that know me very well that will, like, hear a lot of, you know, my conscious or my political music, and they'll be like, yeah, but, like, you were at the club acting stupid last week, though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right, right.
You know, and that happens. That is another aspect of my personality, just like... Mm-hmm. I'm a father. That's an aspect of my personality. I'm a son.
Mm-hmm.
That's an aspect of my personality. And for me, my music needs to reflect the whole of me, right?
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
that's tricky because, you know, we live in a world of branding. And,
yes.
you know, a lot of people want, I have a lot of conversations with people and they're like, well, what image are you trying to project? You know,
mm-hmm.
what do you... You know, the people aren't going to get – that's going to be too much for the people. What do you want them to get?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe I'm just stubborn about it, but really what I want them to get is me. and that's gonna include all of it. That's going to include, you know, the community work. It's going to include the political work. It's going to include, you know, me at the club getting hypey.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to include me making jokes and being silly.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to include me being serious and introspective, because all of those are facets of me.
Sure. Now, I get you on that. You know, when I started doing the radio shows and stepping up and trying to find my way in this world of being the artist cheerleader and showing my support, I clearly went into it, Shamaka, with an idea of the type of artist that I wanted to support. You know, but there was no, like, pinpoint, like, perfect thing. And I too agree with you on that I don't want to be, like, put into a box that this is how, you know, Lady Flava is. You know, at all points or whatever, you know, and that, you know, there aren't other elements, you know, to her. Now there are true enough, there are certain elements that, you know, nobody will probably ever see except my inner circle, you know,
right.
and stuff. But I feel you on that, you know, it's not just one thing that makes up the man, the MC, the activist known as Shamaka Noble.
Right.
So, So when you became a part of, you know, starting the Hip Hop Congress in Northern California, what did that entail? And if you could speak on what exactly the Hip Hop Congress is.
Sure. Well, okay. First off, Hip Hop Congress is a 501c3 nonprofit or national organization. We work with chapters, artists, and affiliates utilizing hip hop to create social, political, and economic change, transformation. You know, we started off, like I said, pretty small. You know, from two chapters to four chapters to eight chapters to, you know, we're at about 30 chapters today. and 30
to 35. Okay.
And I think, you know, I think the most honest thing to say is that we had a vision and no idea what we were actually getting into. As I mentioned, we were like 18. Real was 21. We're kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we just had this idea. The basic idea was this. The music industry, as it existed at the time and in many ways as it exists today, tends to create an environment where everybody's kind of out for self, right?
Yes.
And not just out for self, but under the mentality that there's not enough to go around. So in order for me to get mine, you can't have yours. Because yours is mine, right?
Yeah.
And so our idea was to create an artist community where yours is mine. It's ours, right? And where artists were creating opportunities for themselves and for each other.
Okay.
As opposed to being dependent on some sort of external nightlife entity, right?
Okay.
Or as opposed to be dependent upon some sort of like mysterious industry giant that's going to, you know, come and make things happen for you, you know, making things happen for yourself and making things happen for each other. Now, when we first started, we were a pretty artist-focused organization. Around 1999, in a really interesting kind of coincidence, we stumbled across another group that was organizing around a similar philosophy, but primarily on student campuses.
Okay.
Instead of having a conflict with that group, we decided to merge the ideas.
Oh, okay.
And again, this is kind of a significant moment, I think, in helping to shape the philosophy, right?
Mm-hmm.
What could have been any different types of beef, right, from shouting matches to legal battles, ended up just growing the organization. You know, since then, that was around, like I said, 1999, 2000. It's been quite a whirlwind adventure. You know, we started off in the West Coast, sort of expanded out into the Midwest, into the Northwest, and into the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Still struggling a bit with developing in the South. It's been kind of an up and down thing there.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's where I'll stop with that one.
So with the Hip Hop Congress chapters, they do what in the communities that they are existing in?
So, you know, this is a that's a really, really good question. So it can vary. You know, one thing that we encourage all of our chapters to do is host what we call an awareness festival. It doesn't always have to be called an awareness festival, but, you know, when you look at some of the things that hold communities together, events are very important, right? Like a family reunion is an event, right?
Yes.
Like a baby shower is an event, right?
Yes.
So, you know, the awareness festival is just sort of a staple event that we utilize to bring the elements together, to bring other members of the community organizations together, and to sort of help bring the chapter together, right?
Okay.
We have many chapters that are engaged in youth programming and education, and different types of education, right, ranging from program support to, you know, sort of direct element training, you know, MC programs or painting programs or dancing programs or things of that
nature.
Okay. And one really interesting thing that happens a lot with our chapters, particularly at college campuses and certain types of communities, I feel like this comes back to the earlier question about, like, what what, like socially conscious art,
mm-hmm.
and kind of why sometimes just existing in hip-hop is an action. In some instances where a chapter starts, a community is not very familiar with hip-hop, right? Like, one of the reasons somebody starts a chapter is to get some sort of organizational support to bring a more positive element of hip-hop into a community, right?
Okay.
And certain instances, you know, you have, like, college campuses or high schools or communities that are like, we don't really want that stuff here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the very existence of a hip-hop Congress chapter becomes like a struggle for reform.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So we have a lot of chapters who are really just trying to create, or just working to create awareness. We have chapters that are very engaged in, you know, some degree of like political or social consciousness, right? That will do events around elections or in support of or around community issues.
Okay.
And we tend to have a certain degree of we tend to allow a certain degree of freedom for our chapters to explore possibilities. Although I think that moving forward, some of that is changing a bit. Just as we mature as an organization, because we're at, like,
okay.
I think 13 years now.
Okay.
You know, not quite a newbie anymore. Not super old, but not quite
right.
a newbie.
Right. You know, it's interesting to me, as being a newbie, you know, to learning and growing and coming to having an appreciation for, you know, hip hop and artists and, you know, the different elements and everything. And it's you know, everybody's, you know, because I don't try to hide the fact that I'm new to this, you know,
right,
so everybody,
right.
you know, and, you know, and I appreciate you letting me be a little dummy with you right now, Shimako.
Oh, that's
but,
quite all right. That's great. We're all learning together.
You know, but I'm 50 years old, and one of the things that I really embrace about my age is the fact that, you know, I love learning new things. And just
right.
because I'm older does not mean I know everything. And so when it comes to hip-hop, okay, maybe I'm wrong for saying this, Shimako, and you can tell me, but to me it's so controversial that
mm-hmm.
it is a challenge to me that draws me to it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna actually ask you to elaborate a little bit on what you mean by controversial.
When I say controversial, there's so many... Okay, Shimako, be nice to me now. You're luckier in California right now.
Right.
But, okay, so the reason why I say it's controversial is that, first of all, I think that with the internet and technology out there, it allows people, anybody, not just hip-hop, you know, it allows anybody and everybody that wants to become an artist to become an artist. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can download Audacity for free on your laptop, whatever. You can build your studio at home, you know, get your Pro Tools, you know, Cakewalk, whatever it is that you use, and all of a sudden you're throwing mattresses up against the wall and, you know, you got some kind of microphone and, you know, somebody's making beats and all of a sudden, you know, you call yourself a rapper.
Right.
Well, first of all, I think that not everybody has the skill, you know, to put together the beats that just flow with an artist, you know, lyrics. The artists don't necessarily have lyrics that make sense or, you know, have any substance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, on top of it, you know, we go back and forth in conversation, you know, with people that, you know, that I talk to on what's, you know, subgenres of hip hop, you know, the commercial, the socially conscious, the, you know, whatever gimmicks, you know, just all these little terms are thrown out there. And I sit here as a 50-year-old, you know, listening to the music. And because I do the radio shows and because I do support underground independent artists, I get hit by hip hop artists from all over the United States. And it's interesting hearing the different styles of rap, you know, from, I think there is a different style from different regions. I think that maybe there's also a different topic of, you know, maybe artists and what they're sending, you know, sending out, you know, from different regions too, where, you know, and stuff. And so,
we come out
of Seattle, Washington, right? And we got Sir Mix-a-Lot, right?
Right.
So Sir Mix-a-Lot are, you know, hip hop artists that blew up. You know, he's still making money off of, you know, Baby Got Back and Posse on Broadway, whatever, you know. So then, you know, you go to, okay, Maurice Taylor from, you know, the Hip Hop Congress in Massachusetts reached out to me, and he's like, Leyva, you know, if you've got some hip hop, you know, conscious hip hop. You know, he's like, Leyva, if you got some, you know, some hip hop, socially conscious hip hop spoken word artists that, you know, I might play on my radio show out here in Massachusetts, you know, send them my way or whatever. Shamako, some of the stuff that was sent to me that I thought I made it very clear, conscious hip hop. In my mind, conscious hip hop has to do with community, social issues, political issues, you know, something that has to do with, you know, embracing family, embracing, you know, relationships, embracing life, you know, whatever. You know, it's that's kind of my idea. I got three tracks about booty tight jeans and get grinding up on somebody, and I'm like, really? Really, is that, you know, socially conscious, you know? And so it's, to me, why I say controversial is that if you say certain things about hip hop, certain artists stay away.
Right.
You know, if you say other things, like when it gets to, you know, the things that are sexually okay, I think that we now live in a time where things are desensitized. You know, where, okay, you know, back in the day, if you said the F word, oh, my God, you got your mouth washed out with soap, you know.
Right.
And, you know, when I was coming up, my mama, we got in trouble if we said spastic or retarded, you know. So it's like now, you know, when it comes to the music, certain words are used as if it has a totally different meaning. It doesn't have that, you know, effect, you know, that, oh, my God, you know, they're really pissed off, or, you know, there's, you know, something's not right. And I'm finding that there are artists that either use certain words that that serve a purpose in the pieces.
Sure.
I can respect that when it serves a purpose in telling that story. Because
right.
For me, I'm kind of drawn to the hip hop that kind of tells a story for me.
Right.
And draws me in. Then somebody using those terms as a filler.
Right.
So is what I'm saying making any sense to you?
Yes, it does. and there was also a lot in there. Let me start with this.
Okay.
So, because I had a conversation a lot, right? a lot happened to music in general in the transition from analog to digital.
Okay.
And, you know, among those things, right, we have the 80s, right?
Okay.
Synthesizer heaven. And, you know, you move into the 90s, and, you know, between the 80s and the 90s, what you had was a transition from having to spend all this money to go into the studio, right, to being able to, like you said, basically just, you know, have a studio at the house by the time we get to this past decade, I mean, anybody can have a studio. It's like, if you have $150, you can figure it out. If you have $100,
right.
You can figure it out, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, kind of what you're alluding to is that what used to take a certain amount of effort or resources or what used to take somebody identifying that you had a certain skill set and they would bring you into those resources, now anybody can do it, right?
Yeah, right.
And so you have really is a flooded market, where hundreds of thousands of artists all want you to listen to their hot track.
yeah.
Right?
That's exactly what they call them, Shimako. Hot track.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. Yo, this track is hot. This track is hot. Come check this out. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
It's like the worst song you ever heard.
Yeah.
You're like, why did you even let this be seen by anyone?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, there's, I mean, I think there's an arc on that. I don't think that that's something that's going to last forever to a certain extent, right? I think that that happened in a lot of different industries, though. Like, I remember talking to a friend of mine who was at a journalism conference with a bunch of journalists, you know, and, like, professional journalists, journalists that have degrees in journalism.
Okay.
And they were kind of bitter because they were like, you know, I went to school for 4, 6, 7 years for this, and now everybody's blogging, you know. Now everybody's got a blog.
Right.
Now people are breaking stories on blogs.
Right.
Now, you know, legitimate news outlets need blogs, you know.
Yeah.
And not only that, but, you know, what used to be 5 people's job, right, like what used to be a news reporter and a cameraman and an editor and a writer, plus 4, but so it used to be 4 people's jobs, right? That's now one person's job. Like, you'll see somebody, like a news person, roll up in a car, you know, with a camera. And, like, they're doing the whole story by themselves. They're setting up the tripod. And, I mean, because it's cheaper, right? It's just cheaper to pay.
Right.
Because of the technology, it's cheaper just to pay one person to learn to do all that stuff.
Right.
Than to pay 4 people who went to school for it and want all the money that they technically deserve for having that skill set, right?
Right.
So I think that that's, you know, some of what we're experiencing in music is just a byproduct of a technological transition we're in as a society, right? And so, like, as far as that goes, it's, there's pluses and there's minuses. There's ups and there's down to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I gave the example of journalists. So the journalists are very upset because now, and it's true, right? We've seen a couple instances in the last few years where the internet allowed for bad journalism to basically create a story in America, right? What was her name?
Sure.
Sharon Sherrod, is that her name? The I don't know if you remember the fake video.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Right. And, you know, again, the internet, right, and the ability of the internet to remove the fact-checking phase from the journalistic process played a key role there, right?
Right.
On the other hand, again, hundreds of thousands of people have the opportunity to have a voice that would not have otherwise, period, right?
Sure.
There are people who are capable of expressing, promoting, sharing, points of view, perspective, information that was just not possible before, right? So, you know, anytime you have a system that's based on gatekeeping, one thing that's going to be great about that system is, you know, in theory, going to be a certain level of quality maintained. One thing that's not going to be as fresh about that system is somebody keeping the gate. And not everybody's going to get through, even though a lot of people deserve to get through.
Right.
So we're in an era where, like, certain things just, there's no gatekeeper for it, right? And, you know, music's one of those things. Like, anybody can make it. And again, one of the not great things about that is now, Lady Flavor, you have to listen to 500 rappers every week.
right.
But one of the great things about it is that 16-year-old kid who was never going to get into the studio before is going to do that now, right?
Right.
And not only that, but see, here's what's really interesting. We talk about, like, the quality of hip-hop. So there is a lot of not great stuff out there. I've been around this country quite a bit. There's a lot of great stuff out there. Just looking at the Northwest or Seattle, right? Like, there's so much good music there. Ranging from like Black Stax, you know what I mean? LaRue, Get 'Em Sec, Alpha P, Chocolate, one thing that's really interesting about that situation, right, when we talk about like quality of music, I tend to blame Bill Clinton and the 1997 congressional body for that. Are you familiar with the Telecommunications Act?
No.
You're okay.
Tell me, educate me, Shimako.
Sure, we're gonna talk a little bit about that. So the Telecommunications Act was passed, it might have been 1996. I think it was 1997, but it might have been 1996.
Mm-hmm.
It was passed in the Clinton administration, right?
Okay.
It was deregulation of telecommunications at a time when we were starting to make the move towards broadband, right, as a society.
Okay.
There were a lot of different long-term impacts to that. The one that's relevant to the music industry is that because of the Telecommunications Act, where there was a previous regulation on the amount of media outlets that a corporation could own, following this act, there was no limitation, right?
Okay.
And so what you ended up having was organizations or corporations like Clear Channel, or like Radio One or like Emmis, buying up large shares of the market.
Right. Right.
And so because of that, you ended up with playlists in every community that were the same.
Right. Okay.
Which historically speaking is not the way music works. You could break a record in St. Louis that would eventually get to the whole country. You could break a record in the Bay. You could break a record in Seattle. And up to that point, hip-hop was sort of in that space. Now, mind you, there were still other, forms of corruption or whatever you want to call it involved. There's always been, some form of payola, right? There's always been some form of, like, obstacles in that path. But there was still at least a possibility. There was a lot more of a mix or a balance between this type of music and that type of music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
between what was local and what was national or international, right?
Right, right.
To where now, virtually nothing's local. I shouldn't even say virtually. Nothing's local unless the radio station or the DJ is going out of their way. Or there's been some sort of organized movement to force that to take place.
Right.
Like, literally, the radio station got punked into it. You don't really have, like, a balance of music types, right?
Right.
Whereas in the past, for instance, you could listen to Public Enemy, followed by Ice Cube, followed by Pharcyde, followed by Wu-Tang. And they were all sort of a mix of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like Too Short had Freaky Tales, he also had the ghetto, right? So again, coming back to that whole person point, artists could also be more complete people, right? Like, we saw a lot of different sides of Ice Cube. There were a lot of different sides of Ice Cube. He was He was one minute he was talking about Us and Wicked, and the next minute he was talking about Steady Mobbin and, excuse the language, the nappy, et cetera, right?
Right.
And that was okay because we embraced a whole, right?
Right.
We don't get that same level of wholeness necessarily from, say, like 50 Cent. And I'm not knocking him for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that, like, somewhere along the line, we started expecting less of our artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we started expecting less of our radio stations. And the irony is that we blame hip-hop for it, right? So when you really think about it, and this is one thing that kind of came up for me earlier. When you really think about it, like, think about 80s glam rock. Like, is there even such a thing as, like, conscious glam rock? Or, like, conscious rock?
Right.
Like, we take for granted that we even have the option of conscious hip-hop. Like, that's how quiet hip-hop is.
Yeah.
Is that there's an option. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
good point. Like, good point.
Like, what's conscious everything else? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I don't think anything else even has that.
That's funny. Good point, Chamaco.
Yeah, and it's coming back around to sort of like the sort of beginning phases, like the first decade, two decades of hip-hop. Seems fairly obvious to me that even the non-political elements of it still ended up having some degree of political impact, right? You could argue, for instance, that Ice-T's Cop Killer was just socially irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that. You could also argue that it expressed a sentiment that we saw reflected in such moments as the Los Angeles Rebellion or riot, as what we saw in, you know, the public response, nonviolent response in the Oscar Grant case, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We could say the same thing like NWA, F Police kind of a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like, even those elements of that time had that, you know what I mean? And then we talk about, like, say, like, relationship-type stuff. I think of Method Man, right? And You're All I Need, right? And that was, 94, 95, you know, you had a cat like Method Man doing Love Ballads. You know what I mean?
I mean,
it was a long time ago, but it wasn't the bigger scheme of things, and in the whole of the life of hip-hop, it wasn't that long ago.
Okay.
And if you look at it, you know, I'm mentioning it's 1995. You know, I brought in the Telecommunications Act. You know, there's a transition right there, like right there, mm-hmm. between like 97 to 2001. You know, we had talked about being serious, right, or being fun and silly and sort of stuff like that. But one thing that was a big part of hip hop in its inception was like lyricism, right? And lyricism being an expression of actually having an interest in your skill. Right, so this is kind of a direct, like, this ties directly into why are so many artists so comfortable not being tight, right? what happened to the standard of tight as a whole? Like, it just dropped because really a smaller number of entities were controlling that standard, right? Like, as the radio stations were being controlled by a smaller number of entities, as the record labels are getting controlled by a smaller number of entities, you know, versus the big four than the big three, there was really less and less diversity being placed in the music, right?
Right.
So I'm not trying to take the responsibility off the artists or off the hip-hop community. I am saying that the situation that leads to why is this not better, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of, like, logical systemic responses. It's not just that, like, hip-hop sucks or rappers suck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like something had to bring us here. Like, I came up from an era where, like, people did songs like Self-Destruction on the East Coast and were all in the same gang on the West Coast. Like, that's where, you know what I mean? Like, what happened to that? Where'd that go? Like, who decided to stop doing that and why, right?
Okay.
Because those movements came out of artist communities. You know what I mean? Right? Like, and again, you see that expression now, when you talk about, like, what hip-hop Congress is. Hip-hop Congress is an expression of that mentality, right?
Okay.
Coming from an artist community, right? Or a cultural community. You don't see that kind of movement coming from record labels.
Right.
Or from mainstream artists signed to record labels at this point. You know what I'm saying? You don't, and I'm not knocking him for it, right? But you don't necessarily, Jay-Z's not meeting with the community organizations of our country.
Right.
Jay-Z is meeting with Warren Buffett.
Right.
And hey, that's cool, right? That you want to meet with Warren Buffett and the editor of Forbes magazine.
Right.
Forbes magazine. I think that that's appropriate for where he's at. I also think that there's, you know, that there's a choice there in a way, right?
Right.
On what direction your impact is going to have and why.
Right. So, you know, and I appreciate, you know, the knowledge that you're sharing with me, Shimako, because it's definitely got my mind, you know, going, and it's, you know, the thing that I know that I'll do after this is do a little bit more research, you know, because when I was first introduced, you know, to hip-hop, I'll be honest, I mean, I'm, like, really new to it. I mean, back in the day when I was a kid, of course, it was the Sugar Hill Gang, right? But it wasn't something that I, like, grasped onto or whatever. So when it came to, you know, as of recent, you know, getting involved and coming to appreciate a certain style, it was. It's so funny that you said this, and I don't know if you were prompted, but, you know, it was Black Sax who I was introduced to. It was Yidim Sek and LaRue. And they definitely have
funny.
A dis-
I was not prompted, no.
and it's so funny, I mean, because all of them have been in my house. I have fed all of them, you know, this, that, and the other, you know. So it's like that was my introduction to hip-hop was those three, you know, entities. So that's what I came to appreciate because, you know, hearing the words and they meant something to me. Even if it wasn't my own story, it wasn't something I ever witnessed or whatever. It was something I could feel. And
right.
To me, that's important. Whatever it is that I experience from art, I don't care if it's visual art. I don't care if it's, you know, a book, you know, literature to music. What's going to grab me is something that I'm going to feel, you know, walk away from something. So tell me this then, Shimako, do you think that, you know, what do you think the responsibilities are of artists, period? We don't necessarily even have to label it as hip-hop, but artists, or do you think that they have a responsibility when it comes to, you know, the community and you know, what's going on in the world?
Whew.
Is that another good question?
Oh, man, that one right there. Wow. So, Charles Barkley once said, I am not a role model.
Right.
He said that while he was on TV, but millions of people were watching him. So, even though I really appreciate Charles Barkley as a human being, I believe that was an inaccurate statement. I do not believe you have the choice, in a way, to be a role model, right? Because everybody's always taking in information. And in particular, young people are always taking in information. So the second you're in that space, and I've had to deal with this at a lot of different levels too. The second you're in that space, the reality of the situation is that you're a role model.
Right.
Now, you can choose not to accept that responsibility, right?
Okay.
And there have definitely been a lot of people, and not just in hip hop and music industry. This makes me take a rock a lot. A lot of rockers did that kind of stuff. Like, we're not role models, you know. Like, we're just out here having fun, yeah. And I think that's an inaccurate choice, right?
Okay.
Without putting any, like, judgment on it, right, without it being like, you were so wrong, you know, because that's another thing people like to do. People like to yell at people about how wrong they are.
Right.
Productive,
right.
Right. Right. Like, you need to be a better person. That's not really going to work. So,
right.
I do feel like, yeah, without judgment, I think if, for instance, if 50 Cent thinks that what he's wearing isn't going to influence what other people are wearing, I don't understand why he has a clothing line. Right?
Right.
And if you have a clothing line, you have to know what you're doing influences how people interact with each other, how they interact with themselves, right?
Right.
So to me, it's not really a shouldn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just – it's really just a matter of acknowledging reality or not. The second you step into a world of marketing, you've already said to yourself, I can affect people's minds and decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So everybody already knows. Like, you already know. You know what I'm saying? Like, you already know. And if I wanted to get, like, all conspiratorial about it,
right,
I would say that whoever figured this out early on in the game,
because,
you know, there are such things as, like, what are called lyric committees or whatever, you know. Like, there's a certain, even though you do get some degree of, like, socially conscious and or political stuff coming out of the mainstream, you're not ever going to get, like, too much of it. Let's just put that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not ever going to get the music industry to fund the revolution. I don't see that happening. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
You know what I mean? Because they would only be undermining themselves, right? So it only makes sense. To me, it only makes sense for them to, on a business level, like, again, not even being mad at them. On a business level, why would you sign someone whose ultimate goal is to put you out of business?
Right.
Why wouldn't you sign someone who has a philosophy similar to yours, right?
Exactly.
So, like, you know, like, for instance, you know, everybody calls, like, Obama a socialist or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't really know if he is, or I don't know if I think he is or whatever, but it's a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, when people call Obama a socialist, they're not calling him a socialist as a compliment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're fairly pro-capitalist country. When I say pro-capitalist, what I mean is, whereas in other countries there is a socialist party or a labor party, we can't even really say socialism. Like, we just got around to saying it. We're still using it as an insult.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the music industry equivalent of this, right, it makes sense that you have people like Dr. Dre or 50 Cent or Jay-Z sitting at the top of the food chain, because it seems to me that their philosophy, right, is consistent with the philosophy of the industry as a whole. Like, there's no reason for the industry to blow up an artist who's ultimately going to undermine the existence of the industry. And that's happened before, probably by accident, right? Like, Wu-Tang is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Wu-Tang messed the industry up a little bit because they were the first group, like, they were the first group basically to sign a deal with a major label that allowed the group to be signed without having the individuals be signed, which is a huge deal, right? Because you look at something like the Beatles, and the Beatles signed their label. That label signed all of the Beatles, right? Every individual was signed, right? So Wu-Tang was the first group in history to change that, right?
Okay.
Like, a lot of people in the music industry were very upset at them for doing said thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is the kind of stuff hip-hop doesn't really get credit for, like the little steps that it's taken
in
making it making the music industry a safer space for artists as a whole.
Right.
Again, right, like, even though you still have a lot of Wu-Tang members still around, still active, still present, they don't have the same layer or level of industry support that they once had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got RZA. Of course, RZA, you know, he's still doing his thing. He's doing soundtracks. You know what I mean? He's putting books out, great books. You know what I mean? Like, he's definitely out there. Ghostface still puts out his albums every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still out there. They're still very active. You know, Dead Prez still out there, still very active. But if you really check the roster, like, you can pretty much count the amount of artists the industry allows to exist at any given moment on one hand.
Interesting. Yeah.
And it was not that way initially. There were dozens out there. Like we had a whole era. Think about this. We had a whole era generated by hip-hop of, like, Africa Medallions. We had a whole era of that. We all did it. We had, like, High Top Fade and Cross Color Gear and Africa Medallion.
Okay, right. Right.
You know, and there was X-Clan, you know what I mean? And you know, like I mentioned before, there was Public Enemy and, like any number of groups who could be on that tip, and that was okay. You know what I mean? Like, where is the space for that today?
Right.
And, you know, what they'll say is that, like, the people don't really want that. I'll tell you right off the bat. I traveled through 25, 30 cities last year. I had this conversation with a lot of people, particularly with what would be considered youth, right? And what would be considered, like, and their parents. I can see right off the bat their parents want something different. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I know they're like, why do they keep throwing this at our kids? Like, why do they insist on making our kids listen to this stuff? And then again, mm-hmm. they blame the music, right? Mm-hmm. They have no knowledge of the machine behind the music, right?
Right.
And then, you know, you kind of get a split, like, talk to some youth, and they're just like, walk the clock of fame, son, right? And then
right.
talk to some youth, and they're like, what is this? I don't even know what these people are saying to me right now. Right?
Right.
And really, I talk to people, friends of mine who are inside the industry, who tell me, like, the industry doesn't know what to do right now. Like, can't tell what the people want. And there's so much individualization of market now, right, that, like really, it's you know, before a record label could take risks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and with the way that the industry was structured, they could take risks. They could put out 15, 20 artists in a year and really pay for, like, the majority of those artists on two artists, right? And I don't know if that's a great practice. I just know that's how it works. And, you know, it's not really – again, it's just a much smaller number of artists being put out by what would be considered – the mainstream machine. I mean, like, it's not historically true that it was always the same 10 songs on the radio. That's just not the way it always was. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and it just so happens that 7 of the 10 songs playing on the radio that are hip-hop related happen to not necessarily have the most, like, uplifting content, which, especially at a time of national struggle, doesn't seem practical, right? But again, if you put the artists that would be talking about that stuff on the radio, some of what they would be saying would be things like "Rise Up." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some of what they would be saying is like "Do for Self," right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of what they would be saying. Okay, here's another way to look at it. So when 9/11 hit, right, Clear Channel sent out a stop list on certain songs that were not to be played, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, "You Dropped a Bomb on Me" was not to be played, right? Because it had the potential to trigger negative memories,
sure,
right?
Sure, I understand.
But the point is, somebody thought that through,
mm-hmm.
right? Somebody thought through a whole list of songs that could potentially be misconstrued or used or, like, felt as a trigger in this incident, and then sent that to all of their affiliates. Right? Like,
okay.
how many versions of that are possible?
Right.
We're just aware of that one. That one was public.
Right.
That was. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So, we have some callers on the line, Shimako. I lost one of them, so hopefully they'll call back. But let me bring in the one caller that still has their hand raised that wants to speak with you.
Sure.
All right, caller from the 414 area code, you're on the air with Shimako Noble.
I hear that you're very political, and that's a good thing. I like political people because political people have a tendency to say what's on their mind. And when they say what's on their mind, it's up to if people listen or not.
Mm-hmm.
You were very right when you stated that the FCC changes by Bill Clinton changed the landscape of not only music, but also the way that we communicate with one another.
Right.
Comcast is right now on a tear, especially with their purchase of NBC, which is don't get me started. By them purchasing NBC Universal Networks, they now control 1/3 of what you see. And all of how you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Federal Communications Commission envisioned that possibility when they okayed this deal. In fact,
right.
I know they didn't. That is a tear down activity. And what I mean by tear down, Comcast's goal is to dominate communication. the same way the BBC does.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a season where you won't get any cultural information, any cultural news, or anything uplifting. It's one of the reasons why, back to the NBC issue, there is the Bravo network that shows you nothing good about being a black or a woman. It doesn't even show you how to dress correctly. It just talks about what you should think you should be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get off of that and get back to the music industry. The music industry is its own worst enemy and always has been.
True.
Crime within the music industry is what made music possible in the 50s. There would have been no live venue music without crime.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone goes, that's not true. Well,
Five Heartbeats.
As a story. But yeah. if you look at post World War II America, money was being put into manufacturing and other areas, and there was no money for the arts.
Right.
And artists were doing whatever they could, especially live artists and musicians. In that post era, going into the 50s, and then Korea broke out. Korea was obviously a opportunity for America to make money. It had nothing to do with anything. It was about money. And so as the American political machine continued to move forward, it kind of left everything else in the arts in the dust. And this is why in the 60s you get such a psychedelic movement. You get such a rush of explosion of entertainment because it was made possible by crime. I mean, there's just no other definition to it. It was made possible by crime. And now you point out the Wu-Tang Clan as being the artist or not signed to the label, but the group was the part you missed in the definition. The label did not have any control over who the members of the group could or could not be. That was a caveat that was missing from your definition. Because when you take away the ability for the record label to control who can be in the group, it doesn't matter if the group is called Timbuktu.
Right.
It goes on. And that was their biggest coup to the industry. Not that they had them signed, because as you know, the Temptations are signed to Motown.
Right.
And individually, so were all the artists that were members of the Temptations, were
right.
individually signed to Motown, and they were allowed to be in the group.
Right.
And in the Wu-Tang deal, industry had no control, and somebody was snoozing. And they had a very good lawyer that day. Their lawyer woke up and did his job. And he did it exceptionally well. And so that's how they got over it. And you're all right. The industry does not know what to do with itself. It doesn't know if it should swallow the grenade or jump on the grenade. But
hey,
it knows it has a live grenade.
Yeah. And I think one of the really interesting things that comes up with, like, the crime conversation in particular, you know, when you think about it, right, like, even going back to, like, the Harlem Renaissance and jazz, you know what I mean? Like, that was, like, right next. That was, like, right next to all of that stuff, right? Like, there's always, in many ways, been that type of relationship between the music industry, and not let's be clear, not just crime, but like organized crime, right? And like the highest levels of organized crime, because the music industry is a huge racket that never changed. Like, that never really changed. And one other point that I really like, you know, in terms of talking about like you know, Comcast and you know, a lot of the moves around deregulation, like for instance the move around like financial deregulation also took place in kind of the late 90s. You know, it's interesting you brought up the fact that like they didn't know it was going to happen. I don't really know if they cared, you know. I feel like a lot of the because you know there's a statistic, right? Clear Channel owned like 74, 75 radio stations before the act. Own like twice that, like 140, 150 following the act. So I feel like, you know, it's an extrapolation, right? But I kind of feel like they had a sense of what was possible as a result of looking at
that law, right? And it's really interesting because it kind of calls into question, like, the role our government plays in these conversations, right? Because where they should be leaders, in many instances, they're just doing what some other entity is telling them to, without really understanding what it is that they're doing.
Well, this comes from a stretch of the lobbyists.
Right, exactly.
The FCC Act was perpetrated and carried out by lobbyists, not because it was something cool to do. It was carried out at the hands of, at the time, Disney. Disney Corporation wanted to get into television, and they hatched this idea. And they went to their partner at the time, who was Aaron Spelling and Viacom, and said, "Hey, I got an idea. You, Aaron Spelling, take all of the video sales and partner with Comcast and Disney," which is how you get Hollywood Video, and combined with the next great feature that you didn't see coming, their next largest partner in this being the cable industry as a whole, the cable conglomerate as a whole, which was at the time headed by Time Warner, said, "We have a better idea." They put their lobbyists together and they came up with this idea of deregulation. And now you have these very large conglomerates absorbing everything cultural into a single library, if you will. And in that library is where you get the breakout of a Clear Channel owning 300 stations, you know, and we're just talking U.S. side. There are some towns where there are some radio areas, not towns, the entire area, where every radio station is Clear Channel, and there's no human being in the building, and they're all ran out of the same building. And there's one technician walking around making sure everything is working. And we all know that happens, and we know it occurs. And when they abandon a format, they abandon the community. When they abandon the community, there's no accountability to them. There's no need for them to keep the business or even the meaning of the business local. So that's always a toss-up that they should deal with.
And there's no information flowing directly from the community back out into the community, which is a big part of why radio stations exist to begin with. Well, did exist to begin with, before they became advertising platforms.
Now, Clear Channel Chicago, they are very aware that they need to keep their finger on the pulse of the people, because, like Walmart, they're being chased out of the city.
Right.
And the only... Chicago and the only way for them to hang, the only way for them to hang on is they are making these concessions that allow local programming, local church programming in multiple languages. You know, all these things that are important. Something else you brushed on earlier was talking about, when did advertising become the major push in America? Well, somebody in the late 1890s figured out, with the industrialization and the mechanization of America, the simplification of America had to occur. And this you see represented in your Macy's and some other large retailers of the day, which were like Marshall Field and obviously later Nordstrom here in Seattle. They found out that word of mouth wasn't enough to keep them afloat, because there was enough bad word of mouth floating around. So what must we do? My friend at the newspaper and at the club has unused editorial space. He can always print more paper. Let's use him. What a great idea. I will pay you to put a picture of the front of my store in your newspaper. Okay, I'll do that. And that's how that started. And then it became a tidal wave by the 30s. And everyone pointed out, this is what Sears and Roebuck are doing with a catalog. We have a daily newspaper in our town. Let's get the most out of it. Ta-da! Advertising. Don't tell anybody I think like that.
So, Shimako, I'm sorry. I should have introduced you. This is PC. He is out of the Seattle area by way of Chicago. And so he is he's very active in, you know, many aspects of the arts community, not only just here in the Pacific Northwest, but in other locations. He is, you know, he works with film, people in the film industry. He is very much up on, you know, the hip-hop community here in Seattle for many, many years. And, you know, just he's well-versed on a lot of, you know, things when it comes to, you know, topics like this. So it was interesting that TC called in and wanted to talk to you.
Absolutely. Really appreciate you taking the time, bro.
Yeah, no problem. And also, is a further step that I tell everybody, I really don't like hip-hop. It's almost, I'm respectful of it, but I don't like it.
Yeah. Why not?
You know, it's an acquired taste like jazz.
Right.
You got to grow up to understand it.
Right.
And once you grow up enough to understand it, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It's interesting that you said that, TC, since you're so involved with some of the bigger ups of the hip-hop community.
Oh, now they know it. It's no secret. They know that I don't like it, and they know why. It's usually lyric selection. It's a combination of lyric selection. It's a combination of various things, and it's just one of those things that comes to my attention that the better lyric choices, the better response from the public, the better overall feedback. And that's the part I like.
So, I have to.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to ask you something, Shimako, but go ahead.
Well, I kind of want to just what comes up for me when he. So I have this thing that seems to happen with my shows now. It started sometime last year, and it's kind of weird, but it's just a phenomenon, right? Where. So I have this song called Broke, and I wrote it right after the. Like financial bubble, housing bubble bust. You know, I would do it a lot when I was on this march. And there was like, the phenomenon actually started in Seattle. They did a show before I left. And at the end of the show, this like middle-aged white dude walks up to me and he's like, hey, you know, I don't really like hip-hop, but I really like your stuff. And I was almost positive that he was really just talking about Broke. Because like the nature of the song is such that like if you've ever been broke and angry at the system, you're going to feel it. I really don't care what race you are, what religion you are, what gender, you know. And it's funny because like that happened several times like throughout the last year where like I would do my set, I usually end it with Broke, and at the end of the set some middle-aged white dude would walk up to me and be like, hey, man, I don't really listen to rap, but I really liked your stuff. Like, it got to the point to where, like, I would tell somebody that was going to happen, and then I would do my set, and then it would happen. And what's really interesting, right, I had a show last night, right, in Auburn, California, which is, you know, kind of a smaller town in California, like 10,000 people.
Oh, I know where it is.
Right? And I finished my set, and I'm outside or whatever, and sure enough, the middle-aged white dude comes up to me like, hey, man, I don't normally listen to rap, but I really liked your stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, and again, I ended the set with that particular song, so I feel like that's the impression they're getting left with. That. I think it's point very valid, right? Like, it's what I mean. Real simply, it's what you can feel, it's what you can relate to, and it's what your body likes.
Sure.
Very true.
Well, I mean, and I say this a lot of times to artists, you know, and I think they're like, oh, my God, you know, Lady Flava doesn't know what she's talking about. But I said, you know, I've told several hip-hop artists, you know, that their beats, the beats of their piece is what catching the attention of people versus the words. So it's really not the MC, you know, the rapper that's winning them over. It's the beat maker.
Right.
know, so if you're going somewhere, your head is bobbing because, you know, you can even make my old lady head bob, right?
Right.
But when, but once I really pay attention to the words, I'm like, well, what the hell is that, you know?
Right.
So, you
well,
know,
I,
the go ahead.
I had a conversation, and man, I every time I have a hip-hop conversation, this is the number one thing that comes to my mind. I worked an event where I used to be security back in the day. I worked an event where I had Chuck D and Flavor Flav. And all Chuck D wanted to do after the show was go back to the hotel and relax. And he's got this throng of people chasing him, not literally chasing him, but following him down the street. And we're having this conversation about the future of hip-hop. And he goes, you're really going to be shocked what happens over the next 4 or 5 years. And this was in 1993. He goes, man, it's either gonna make you go wow or make you run. And I just left it at that. I went back and picked up Flavor Flav. This entire conversation was about the way things used to be. And it marveled me to find out that little Flavor Flav plays 7 different instruments. He's an accomplished drummer, pianist, trumpet player, and he puts on this Viking hat and acts an ass. He is the one who gave up because he wanted to be seen, and that was his whole thing when he was on stage. I want to be seen. Whereas Chuck D's whole thing was on stage is, I want to educate. So it's also the message that the artist sends, not only consciously, but subconsciously, the message that he sends. Those things make a difference as well, and if you like their music or not.
So Shamako, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because, you know, I do want to play some of your music, too, and I was like, okay, that's a perfect segue into playing Broke. But do you feel, because now that there are, you know, is it right of me to call up subgenres of hip-hop?
You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, you can't really turn back the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's right of you. Now, I'll tell you right off the bat, I know quite a few artists who, if you call them alternative hip-hop, they get really upset.
Mm-hmm.
They get really upset. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're out there already.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, if they're practical, cool, I would just hope that, like, you know, in this conversation and in general, you know, I don't know if you can turn back the clock, but if we can start moving towards a more holistic understanding of not just music and artists, but of ourselves, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
in general, like, we're a real dualistic society. It's got its, we like to separate things instead of bringing things together.
Right. So can I put you on the spot and ask you a question?
Sure. What's my subgenre?
So do you think that all forms of hip-hop, you know, since we're on the topic of hip-hop, I mean, I could open it up to all you know, genres of music, but do they serve a purpose, a legitimate purpose?
Yes. Yes, they do. Yeah. Do all genres of hip-hop serve a legitimate purpose? Yes. Does every artist in the genre understand or respect that purpose? No.
So when you say that it does, okay, so what about music that objectifies women?
Okay. What's really interesting to me about that question is how many women love 50 Cent.
Right.
Not that there aren't women that hate him or that despise his message.
Yeah.
But, like, on my first album or whatever, like, I never used the B word.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I never got props for that. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I had one journalist in Oakland who was a woman who loved gangster rappers tell me I was too soft.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, not, I mean, you know, whatever, you're entitled to your opinion. But there's a cold, hard reality in this conversation, right?
Okay.
I'm an anti-misogynist. and we're all in that conversation together, right? And it's kind of tricky because, again, it's like we can yell at Nelly for the credit card slide, right? And we're still left with the fact that, like, there's a whole bevy of women who are very attracted to Nelly. So it's kind of like a mixed message if you're him. Because, yes, there's this group of people that's very upset, and there's this group of people that really don't care, right?
Right.
And when you have the group of people that are very upset and they're yelling at the artist, that just puts the artist on the defensive, so, like, you don't even really get any communication on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know, and everybody always makes this excuse or whatever, but it is kind of a reality. Our entire country is misogynist. Our, like, economy is partly built on misogyny, on exploitation in general, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's kind of, again, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, hip-hop actually had a Queen Latifah. Like, we had one. She's still out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more of that back in the mix. Nicki Minaj is an interesting situation because while she may have the, like, physical appearance of a Lil' Kim, like, she's got the lyrical approach of a Latifah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really listen to how she's busting? Like, I fell for the appearance at first where I was like, whatever. And I actually had, like, you know, a couple people be like, I think you should really listen. And when I really listened to her, I was like, man, she's actually driving the standard of lyricism up right now. Like, in general. You know what I mean? And, like, nobody's talking about, like, I don't hear the conversation coming from that angle.
Right.
Like, we're not even having conversations about Nicki Minaj's lyricism. So there's another part of this, which is when we love to focus on when people are being misogynistic, we have, like, virtually no focus on empowered women or men that are not being misogynistic.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. It comes down to always pointing out, you know, the negative of something versus when something's being done right and should be appreciated and acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do really wish that a lot, like, I mean, just in terms of, like, bad artistry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some songs, like, you know, I'm sure you get these songs, you know, shake your booty, like, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, detract from the conversation we're having, but, like, sometimes they're not even really good songs.
So
you're being misogynistic and the song sucks.
Well, exactly. So that's why I was trying to put you on the spot, Shimako, and say, you know, because of the background that you come from as a hip hop artist and being part of Hip Hop Congress and speaking out, you know, across the United States on social, you know, issues that, you know, do, you know, Kimora, stop. I'm sorry. I have my granddaughter here with me, and she's just like, yeah, off the chain. It just makes me wonder, okay, if something's considered commercial hip-hop and, you know, or gimmick, you know, talk about the rims or talking about the women or the money that you have or, you know, want to portray that you have but don't necessarily have because you rented it for the video, you know, or whatever it is, you know, is that hip-hop that's respected by those that are, you know, put themselves in the category of being socially conscious?
Wait a minute. You kind of lost me. Wow.
Was that a wrong question?
Yeah.
That was a wrong question to ask?
No.
That's
the
wrong
question. Bring that one back. Bring that back one more time.
For somebody who is in a, for instance, in a position like yourself, being, you know, one of the founders of a hip-hop Congress, being one who speaks around the United States on social justice issues, one who, you know, raps a certain style. Do you have an appreciation for the another form of hip-hop that's been born, birthed off of the origins something that was very different than what you might experience now.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. And I think, okay, well, again, I think that's evolutionary, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about Too Short, for instance, right? So, like, when Too Short came out, there wasn't 1 million Too Shorts, or there wasn't 1 million people trying to be Too Short, right? And not only trying to be Too Short, but, like, not all of Too Short, just one part of Too Short. Because, again, Too Short is a whole dude who's had a lot of different things he's had to say, right, for different reasons. And there is a lot to be said for telling your story. And, like, like there's a certain degree of who Too Short is on Wax that's authentic. That's, like, actually who he is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But then you have people who see Too Short's success and want to mimic it, which is different than it being who they actually are.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I think part of what you're referring to is what we experienced at a certain point in hip-hop was the emergence of artists who were expressing who they actually were. Then you have both an industry and a society who sees the success of certain types of people.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you have 14 million carbon copies of people trying to be something that they're really not.
Right.
You know what I mean? Kind of that,
and at the
sense?
Same time, it does. At the same time, you brought a perfect artist as an example for this. Is in Too Short, the guy I know who's the number one fan of Too Short is probably now in his 60s, but he introduced me to Too Short while he was in his 40s. And white guy, and he was like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about, and he's your shit. And I kind of just laughed at him. I thought he was joking with me. But he goes, no, man, you got to listen to what he's saying. And when he said, listen to what he's saying, that let me know that rap had a greater voice than we had given it credit to in the past. And we were making a contribution to everything that goes on in America.
Right.
In finding your way into lyrics, what are you finding as subject matter? What makes you want to say something?
Okay.
Kimura, stop.
Wow. I can't really boil that down to a principle. I mean, because sometimes something happens. And, like, there's a process that I need to write it out, right? Or, like, sometimes I'm trying to communicate a message. Like, that's definitely the case with Broke. Like, with Broke, I was trying to put something that I was talking to people about a lot, that I was reading about a lot, that was out there in the space in that moment, into a digestible form. Like, in a simple, like, fun, like, I don't know how to put it, like, a fun, digestible form. Like, say what you want to, man, but Fight the Power was fun. You know, they're from the physical.
Yes,
that,
it
you know?
Was.
Like, it's fun. Fight the Power. Yeah, fight it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's serious, but it's fun, right? So I think,
great video,
you know,
great song.
Yeah. I think things that feel like a part of, like, the live stream, like things that are really a part of the live stream. What I don't like to do, I don't like to talk about what I would classify as nothing. That's just me, right? I don't like to talk about nothing. I think there's too much happening in life to talk about nothing. But that's just me. I mean, like, on the flip side, right? Like, I'm across the street. I live across the street from, like, a household, and, like, four or five people in the household all do car detailing, right? So if they were to rap about cars, that would make sense because that's what they do every day. If I were to rap about cars, that would not make sense because I don't really care. You know what I'm saying? So, like, for me to rap about cars because I think that's what people want to hear is disingenuous, right? For me, right, I'm out here doing, like, this particular type of work, and after work is done, I go to the club and kick it. So to rap about those things, right, or the time that I spend with my sons or watching my sons be born, right, or to talk about the experience I have in my travels and wanting to share that experience with others. I guess those are things that kind of motivate me.
Okay, so that's what brings out the writer in you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself
So yeah, so you taking over? You taking over my show, TC?
No, I just had a few questions that I definitely wanted to answer.
Okay. There's 25 minutes left, and I do want to play some of Shimako's music, too, so people can get a taste of not only, you know, the activist in him and you know, the background of hip-hop. I wanted them to get a taste of his flavor, too. But go ahead.
Well, no. Here, after this next question and answer, we'll go to music. But I wanted to.
Did you hear him say
out.
We'll go to music?
Right. Yeah. You definitely are co-hosting right now, TC. Just keeping it real. You just slid into the co-host role. I like how you did that.
Okay. at some point, nobody wants to go see Houdini at 60 on stage. So with that as a basic caveat, where do you see yourself moving to after the rap career has mellowed?
You know, that's interesting because people still seem to mind seeing the Rolling Stones on stage at 60. Maybe Houdini doesn't get a lot of love, but Cher sure does. I mean, I might have a mild contention with that. Like, I don't know if that's true. I think that quite a few, again, hip-hop gets messed up in the genre, right? Like, because we came out on some we're youth culture type-ish, now we have 45-year-old men trying to pretend like they're 25, and they're 45. Like, you're 45, you're out here, and you're 45, and you're rapping, and that's what you're doing. So really, he's already old on tour. Like, that's already happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, right? Like, that's already going down. But that's the thing, right? The way we look at it, it's not, right? So, like, that, and really, in most other genres, like, comedians tour till they're dead. You know what I'm saying? Like literally, we'll die the day after the show. Like, most forms of entertainment allow for aging to take place. And in fact, in many ways, your aging is supposed to be the space for improvement. Like, in hip-hop, you're on some sort of clock. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, man, you got about 3 more years, player. You know what I'm saying? Go, get it in. So there's that part of it. That being the case, right, I have thought about other aspects of my career. I actually have a lot of different things that I would like to transition into. Part of what I'm doing right now is sort of developing a consultancy business. Everybody's a consultant. I do work a lot with community organizations, with nonprofit organizations, with governmental organizations, political campaigns, with corporations. And I would like to continue to develop that aspect of myself, or those aspects of myself, so that when I feel like I'm done making an effort out of putting my music out there, you know, I have other elements of my career to move to. And somewhere in my head, I see myself going back to school eventually to, like, study biotechnology, but I don't really know if that's going to happen yet.
All right. Good point to play some music.
Thanks, TC. Thanks for being my co-host.
For sure.
You're welcome, baby.
So anyway, with that said, I do want to give the listeners of Flavor News Radio and the Leopard Carpet a taste of Shimako Noble's flavor. So I'm going to play the piece that he spoke on, and this is Broke.
For sure.
Yeah, 2010, Shimako Noble, cats is broke. You act like that's a joke, like these cats will not grab a gack and smoke for life. Half a coke and a jacket low, getting the sense you ain't out here.
Nope,
but the young G's are really about it and down to clown here. Down to move pounds all across the town here and make moves without fear. We got these poorly rated makeshift lawmakers fucking up. Fakers seeking takers, but the haters still coming up.
Still
people
coming
losing
up.
Their homes with no one to blame except an imaginary market that gets harder to tame. God is the same. These credit companies hard to contain. Villages plunder and just chalk it up as part of the game. Stalking your ways, call you a game. Make deals, don't even know who you bargaining with. They try to act like it's not a threat to their order. daughter. What? But thousands in Detroit still don't have any water.
Hell
going
no.
out to your son or your daughter to find them up for their own slaughter. Another public housing unit torn up. Police don't even bother with conversations or whatnot. They just speak with a taser or object with a gunshot. They can pour a straw in the court of law. It is crystal clear. Convicted for surviving the traps they have engineered. Yo,
yo,
hey, yo. Castle's broke.
Say it,
hey, Castle's broke.
We need to tell them right now.
Hey, yo, Castle's broke.
They need to know right now.
Yeah, Castle's broke.
If you feel it in your pocket,
yo, Castle's broke.
If you feel it in your leg,
yo, Castle's broke.
If you feel it in your car,
Castle's broke.
If you feeling it, if you feeling it.
Yeah, folks are starving. The White House is starting to look like J.P. Morgan. Obama just barged in by a limited margin because of his charm and all of the harm the Bush farm did. But I'ma keep it real.
Yeah,
even though we won, we still got an economic system that is overrun.
Completely.
And we don't understand it.
No.
And we are all lost.
What?
These corporations, they only want to cut the cost. They hack away your jobs.
Yeah.
Prices are never lost. Playing ball more expensive. People have left it lost. We've always loved America cause we've been better off. But give a war goodbye to privilege, y'all, cause we just shifted off. They bail our head up blank, raise the stakes for corporate conies. We have to choose between make work to get our heart exploding. It sickens up in the teeth. We see the plot unfolding, cooped up in a pseudo free market. Just as it starts imploding.
Yo,
hey, yo, cast is broke.
Come on, say it out loud.
Yo,
like,
cast is broke.
Say it right now.
Hey, yo,
like,
cast is broke.
Yeah,
cast is broke.
People out here hurting right now.
Hey, yo, cast is broke. Yo, cast is broke.
Just tell the story.
Yo, cast is broke.
Just tell the story.
Hey, yo, cast is pissed. Critical mass, what'll happen to us after this? It's a conspiracy, a theory we can master. If we get past our past, look at the math and just smash the shit. For many, there's a god, but some cash is it. And they'll be glad when fascism crushes activists. Why are fathers sweeping our bitches while pundits addicted to pills? Or sending our TV just promoting agendas, yo. We could affect it all with our collective thought. But there are sections lost, and there are sections bought. And there are sections that may never want to understand. And there are sections that will gain the upper hand, working the numbers, man. There are lines drawn, your wrong tries to rise a fist. Signify your mind, then focus, use your mind to fist. It won't take one of us,
not one.
It won't take 25.
25.
It won't take all of us, for all of us to survive. Hey, yo, cast is broke.
Cast is broke.
Hey, yo, cast is broke.
Cast is broke.
Yo, cast is broke.
Yeah,
yo, cast is broke.
Cast is broke. Yo,
hey, yo. Cast is broke.
Cast is broke.
Yo, cast is broke.
Just tell them right now.
Yo, cast is broke.
Hey, yo, tell them right now.
Yo,
like,
cast is broke. Rock Castro. Bollywood Records. West Coast.
Hello.
Hello.
So. So,
Shimako, so maybe we could finish out the show by talking a little bit about just yourself as an artist and, you know, the pros and cons of what you've experienced, you know, as an underground independent artist, you know, just trying, you know, to get recognized and appreciated for your style of art. And what has that journey been look like for you?
Mm.
Okay. Is that another good question? No.
The journey looks wow. If you talk to certain friends of mine, there have been moments in my life where I was basically like, I'm not even really gonna rap anymore. And really that was a lot less about my desire to do the art than it was about my lack of a desire to interact with the music industry and like the struggle as a whole, right? Putting myself in the pot of the making my CD number 501 for you,
mm-hmm.
Lady Flavor, to hear, right?
Right, right.
Um,
there's definitely been moments where I was, inclined to just move on, just focus on other elements of my career, right?
Okay.
And it's also been a very remarkable experience in a lot of unanticipated ways, right? Like for some people, like the big stuff is like getting flown everywhere and like getting like nice hotels and like, well, I'm not gonna front, getting checks is tight, so there's nothing wrong with getting checks.
Mm-hmm.
But like the rock star part of it or whatever, like the glamour part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun. That can be fun. Yesterday I was in Auburn, right? As I mentioned, and like in the middle of the day or whatever, they took us down to this river. We just hit this river or whatever. Like when I talk a lot about this march. When I was on this march, I used to go to, like rivers in every city that I went to, right? It seems like a little thing, but like that kind of stuff is those are the kind of like opportunities that can be afforded, right? Opportunities to see the country, right? To meet the people, of America, to meet the people of planet Earth. Opportunities to, like, I got to do a workshop with this program, Gateways, in Olympia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Organized by Professor Tony Zaragoza. And, I just wrote raps with, like, 13, 14 cats. We just, made art together. I don't know. That stuff is like, it makes me feel alive. That stuff makes me feel alive. And I think that's a big part of, like, my artist model, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, some people's artist model is I make music and you listen to it, right? my artist model is a little different than that. It includes making music and you listening to it. It also includes us making music together. It also includes us, like, creating events for the sake of, like, expressing that music together.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like all of that, and it's taken me a while to figure out how to make that work, right? Because it's a little bit complicated, and it's not like the classic American approach to artistry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the first conversation I had about that type of a business model was with a business consultant from the Netherlands, right?
Okay.
Who basically works with several different types of small businesses and artists. And we were having this conversation. He was like, one thing that's important to contemplate is that, as we move forward into the world of CDs and MP3s, artists are going to get paid less and less directly on the sales of their music. So you need to think about what your model is going to be, right? For some people, it's selling merchandise. For some people, it's teaching, right? For some people, it's including others in their artistic process. So, we had asked earlier what I was going to do headed into my 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But really, a lot of what I'm going to do in my 40s, I'm already doing now. I'm just not
okay.
going to be rapping. You
okay.
know what I'm saying? Like I'm already technically speaking a political consultant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
like I'm already technically speaking like a music industry consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't intend on stopping any of that stuff. In fact, again, I intend on utilizing this period of my career to help develop those aspects of my business. And so far it's working out. There's still some rough edges, some kinks to work out in the system, and they are quite the mighty kinks.
Right.
But I don't have any complaints at this point. It's just there's a lot of work involved. I need some interns. So if there's anybody listening who wants an intern, please call me, email me, hit my website up. I'll finish with. One thing that does suck, right?
Okay.
About DIY. Is that
mm-hmm.
DIY? Doing it yourself is great because there's nobody to tell you what to do. And
right.
doing it yourself cannot be great because you're doing it yourself. And there's nobody else doing it. So like,
I feel you on that one.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yes,
it's
I
tricky,
do.
You know? like, actually, to tell you the truth, and I'll be honest, I had two people call me to remind me to have my phone charged for this interview because it's well known that my phone won't be charged sometimes, right?
Okay.
And that's not good for business. But that's the kind of thing where it's just like, okay, it would be nice if, you know, you have staff people and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm sure it'll get there. I'm sure it's actually getting there. You know, just in terms of the actual, like, music-making part, I've actually really – I love it more and more all the time, right? Like, I enjoy making music more, like, every single day and have the desire to improve every single day. So, again, kind of coming back to that question, even when I'm not doing it, like, quote-unquote professionally, I'm never going to stop.
Right.
I'll be a 60-year-old rapper. Trust it. And I'll be better than a lot of 20-year-olds. Trust that, too.
There you go. I totally feel you on that, though, because, you know, a lot of what it is that I do, you know, Shimako, I do on my own. And a lot of it is, you know, I'll be honest with you, I got trust issues. You know, so to be able to put my baby in the hands of somebody else and trust that they're going to follow through with what I need them to follow through, is kind of hard. So it's almost like for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to do it myself because if I don't make this happen, then it's on me. I don't have anybody else to blame. So,
right, exactly. And, you know, if you're not paying somebody, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not their baby. You can't really be that upset at them.
Exactly. And I say that all the time. If I had the money to pay somebody to do a specific something,
I could demand them to do it.
You should make that a T-shirt. Right.
That's a T-shirt.
Right. Keep that up.
You know?
Right.
Yeah,
right. But,
exactly.
So, I told you, Shimako, this was going to go by fast.
Right.
so we got like 8 minutes left in the show. But why don't you let us know.
About projects and stuff that are coming out.
Yeah, projects that you've got coming up.
Right, or stuff. Okay. Well, so first off, right now, I just re-released my first album, The Return of the Coming of the Aftermath. It's super dramatic, right? I re-released that, it's available for download on my website, which is www.shimakonoble.com. I just want to say for the record that I made the conscious decision not to utilize iTunes, if anybody wants to assume that there was a challenge with that. In May, possibly June, I'm kind of in conversation with my label around this. I'll be releasing the first of two mixtapes, Sword of the West, First Scroll, Second Scroll, about 15 songs in each project. And I'm actually really excited about it because I feel like these two projects coming up really reflect the artist communities that I work in. There's a lot of features and collaborations. So I'm juiced about that. And then towards the end of the year, December 15th, it's my twin boy's birthday. I'll be releasing my solo album, Personal Issues, all off of independent record label, Rendezvous Records. Also, we got a few other projects coming up this year. The Mr. Network album, D. LaBrie, the president of Rendezvous Records, also the super homie brother, my brother. So that'll be dropping Memorial Day in May. Keep your eyes open for that. YDMC, also another artist on our label, dropping his solo album, Under the Radar, a little later on this year. So actually our label has a lot of activity coming up.
Okay.
I will be in the Northwest for the All City Chop show, which I believe
is
May 13th. Right.
Okay.
I believe that's May 13th.
So maybe I'll have the opportunity to meet you then.
That would be pretty tight. I would like that. We can make that happen. because you fed everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want some food, too.
I'm a good cook.
Right.
I am.
And so then it's really interesting, like a kind of a mini tour coming up. So there's some dates in Seattle, some dates here in the Bay, and some dates in Los Angeles all coming up in May that I'm pretty excited about. And a lot of other stuff. I'm actually working right now in a political capacity as an assistant campaign manager for the Sherry Honkala for Sheriff campaign out of Philadelphia. She's running on a Green Party platform, no foreclosures, no evictions. Sort of tie into that whole broke concept. I'll be spending a lot of time this year in Philadelphia. Lord knows what will pop up between now and then, right? So I don't know. If you have any questions about those, I guess those are kind of the projects I'm working on now.
Where can people find out more information about yourself?
Okay, yeah. So, again, you can go to www.shamakonoble.com. I definitely need to update it. See what I'm saying? I suggest pay somebody, right?
Right, exactly.
They can definitely go there. Also, you can go to www.hiphopcongress.com.
Okay.
You know, always check out, what's going on both with me and with the organization there. I saw you share this on Facebook. There's a Wikipedia page. I do want to state two things about that. One, I did not put that up. And two, because
right.
People will be like, why did this dude just put up his own Wikipedia page? did not do that. Two, it's really, that went up like about when Wikipedia was created.
Okay.
So it's
not current.
New.
Okay.
No, it is not.
Bad
but
flavor,
the information
flavor.
In there is valid, though. It's valid. It was just
hey, but you know what?
Valid.
But you're Googleable, Shamako.
Yeah,
it
I can be Googled.
You're Googleable.
Which I have mixed feelings about. I got mixed feelings about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not really.
Really?
It's great. It's, great for promotions and marketing. Great to make people feel like you can be accessed. It's like Google's all up in my business, though.
There's
all up in my business, though. Facebook, too.
Right.
They're such important tools, and they're all up in my business. Like, I know that little section on the side of Facebook, like, where it has a little line of your friends or whatever. Like, why does Facebook always know who I, just talked to, though? Like, where it's like, your friends are this person. And it's like, I just got off the phone with that person. You know what I mean? It's not very comfortable for me.
Right. I can kind of understand what you're saying. But, you think about going back to the technology that we talked about earlier in the show, I mean, if we went back in the day where we didn't have this way of being able to communicate and network and spread the word about who we are and what we're doing, you'd be stuck, in your little town of Auburn, California. Right there in San Jose. I mean, at least you're kind of lucky. You're kind of right there in the Bay Area where there's things happening down there.
I was thinking about that the other day, and that's an interesting point, because I was thinking about, I was too short, E40, right? And, how convenient it was. Like, you remember the phrase out the trunk? Like, out the trunk was a phrase that was directly related to, having tapes. You had to have boxes. You had to put those boxes in your trunk. You know what I mean? And like you can't really, it's not really that kind of, that era anymore where you can just, be out the trunk. Because, if that's the case, then, there's another 75 people on the same block. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Also coming out of the trunk. So, again, it's kind of, there's plus minus to it. Not plus minus, but, there's ups and downs to it. You're right. I totally love being in an era where I can make a video and upload it. In 3 hours. That's great.
Exactly. Right.
And there's another 6.7 billion people that can do the same thing.
We're gonna work it out. We're gonna work it out.
Well, right. The competition, like you said, you know, that's out there, and the people that, you know, are getting on and creating, you know, and some of them are do not have the talents or the messages that necessarily. I might be saying something too again that I shouldn't, but you know what the heck, I'm Lady Flava, I can say it. You know, but there are people out there, as we know, that are getting the financial backing to create that don't necessarily have. All right, Kimura, you're losing your mind right now. That are getting played, you know, on
right.
the air. And so, you know, the competition is stiff, you know, and to be able to get those that are deserving, you know, to be, you know, have the light shine on them and, you know, be recognized. You know, what I do, Shimako, is so very small, you know, but I'll be honest
right.
with you, even in how small it is of what I do, I have a following around the world. And,
right.
you know, for instance, like Black Stacks, okay, we'll talk about them because I'm on the Black Stacks team. You know, they are being played on two stations in Germany, two stations in London. They have fans in Switzerland. There is an artist in Switzerland that wants them to come over and do a tour with them over there. They're
right.
being played in Washington, D.C., Chicago, Atlanta, and Baltimore, you know, Colorado, California, you know, right now.
Right.
You know, and so if it wasn't for this form of being able to communicate, you know, I'm sure just with Black Stacks, they wouldn't be out there being heard and being recognized and talked about and written about around the world. You know,
right.
so, you know,
And that's true. And we're definitely in the era of, like, the era of the entrepreneur. That's really what we're talking about right now. You know,
right.
like, and this is even more, it's even more that than, like, that out of the trunk phase I was talking about. Like,
right.
everybody can be like their own production company right now. And there is
yeah.
a real beauty to that. A real beauty to that. And that's,
and the,
pretty, that's pretty,
all,
pretty nice radio playlist,
you know,
right there.
Right. So it, and then, you know, the other thing though is, you know, I love hearing the stories. I don't really hear it out here in Seattle, Washington. I hear it out in, you know, especially like North Carolina, you know, Atlanta, you know, South Carolina, D.C. and stuff, of the artists literally selling their, you know, CDs out the trunk of their car, you know.
Right, right.
And how many units they're moving, you know, and stuff. And it's like, you know, we already know Santonio Banderas, you know, he's got one of the meanest, you know, street hustles out there, you know.
Right, right.
You know, Santonio will go up to everybody and anybody with his CD, you know.
Right.
And so it's like, I kind of love that.
And it's a good CD.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I kind of love that when an artist has that capability. Because one thing that, you know, I am learning too, Shimako, is that even though somebody may be able to get on the stage and perform,
mm-hmm.
they don't necessarily know how to sell themselves off the stage.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. So, like, the Netherlands homie I was talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one other thing he mentioned, right, was he was like, no matter what person I'm talking to as a consultant, right, if it's a small business owner, right, or if it's an artist, if I determine that entrepreneurship is a necessary quality for success
mm-hmm.
in this endeavor, I make them take a test. He has, like, a test for it, like
mm-hmm.
an entrepreneurship test. And if they don't
mm-hmm.
pass the test, he doesn't work with them, right? And it's not that
mm-hmm.
he wants to be mean about it. He's like, the reality is you are not the type of person who is going to be able to build this from the ground up, right?
Right.
And, like,
right.
actually have somebody, like, put that out there to you is, you know, it's pretty key, right? Because there's people who spend 20, 25 years, like, why didn't this work out? And it never occurs to them. It was because they weren't necessarily, it just wasn't their personality trait.
Yeah.
And that's not, like,
well,
a horrible thing. You know what I mean? It's just, like,
you have to be the whole package in a sense, you know,
right.
to be able to get out there, or you need to be able to pay for the whole package.
One of the two.
You know?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, whether you be able to pay a manager, a publicist, you know, a booking agent, you know, whatever, all the little entities that an artist may need to help put them out there, and all you have to do is show up and get on stage, you know, or show up and take pictures or show up and say a few words, you know, or whatever. You know, otherwise, you're the whole package, just like you talked about, you know,
right.
Marketing, promoting, you know, the office management, you know, whatever, remembering to charge your cell phone before interviews, you know,
right.
Whatever it is. I mean, you have to do that whole thing, you know, unless you've got a team behind you, you know, to do it for you. And there are some people that are lucky and blessed enough to have their own team, even though the team's not getting paid to help make moves for them, you know.
Yeah,
so,
and I would be exaggerating if I were to say, like, I don't have a team. I mean, I definitely have
right.
a team, right? Like,
right.
even have people call me to be like, yo, charge your phone. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're on the team, right? You know, there's – it's funny because one thing I've noticed, I feel like every time I feel like I've got my bases covered, like a new base emerges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hadn't even thought about that one yet.
But,
you know, me, myself, I'm a big fan of the grind. I like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I like the hustle. Actually,
I
don't mind the competition at all. I enjoy competition
mm-hmm.
myself. What I don't like, though, or I shouldn't say what I don't like, what becomes challenging – again, I keep using this example, it's just a market flooded enough to create millions of cynics. You know what I mean? So, like,
mm-hmm.
like when I talk about, like, the middle-aged white dude who comes up to me and tells
yeah.
me that he doesn't normally like rap, I'm like, yeah, I just broke
yeah.
through your cynicism is what you're telling me.
Right.
Like, you had
right.
a closed – you had a – with decent reason. You had been
mm-hmm.
trained to believe that it was, you know, garbage, basically – and somehow
mm-hmm.
something I did or said to the other side of you, to the extent
yeah.
that you felt obligated to tell me that it got to the other side. I didn't experience it, but you wanted
right.
me to know that it happened, right?
Right.
And so, like, part of what I'm struggling with, it's funny, this is actually the thing I've been thinking about a lot today, is, like, how to take that independent hustle in this area to, like, new levels, right? I had this conversation a lot, particularly with a friend of mine, Chris, based out of Atlanta. Like, every time I talk to Chris, he's like, man, you need to just package yourself as an artist and just, like, kind of blow up, you know, get the single mainstream. That's what he talks, he's a really excitable dude. Get a single on the mainstream,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean? He's, like, really, but he's right, though. Like he had his whole concept of the artist as a business and that being the model of today, I think is absolutely true. Absolutely
right.
true. What that
right.
looks like for each individual artist is different, and that's kind of the thing that I'm sifting through right now, I think, with my team.
Right. Right. And you know, all you know, I will publicly offer, you know, anything that I can do to help you, you know, with promoting anything, and definitely I'll play your music on my shows and. You know, whatever it is that I might be able to assist you with, you know, Shimako, I definitely will put it out there, you know, for you to, you know, take me up on that. Because, you know, I knew that you were going to be good people. I mean, because, you know, I knew I had heard of you from Jace from Black Stacks and, you know, and then when I connected with Maria Kang and stuff, you know, I knew that it would be a good thing. I didn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I figured that this would this
Maria,
time
Maria
you would
was
go
one of the charger calls, by the way.
I figured that.
Yeah.
She's a good mama. I could see
yeah.
Shimako charge your phone.
Yeah, 444. Right?
But, you know, I think that, you know, you're somebody who's worthy, you know, to be recognized, you know, and to, you know, hear your story. It was so very interesting to me, and I did learn something, and I appreciate you for that because, you know, after I you know, closed out the show and everything, you know, there are some things that I'm going to think about, and you know, and I, you know, I have my, you know, I have my, I don't know if I should say prejudices or whatever of the style of music that I like. You know, I
yeah.
came up, you know, in a time where, you know, R&B, soul, you know, the old school stuff, you know, and jazz, you know, was my appreciation. So just like up here in Seattle, we no longer have a jazz station, you know. So
right.
that's why I had created a jazz show you know, on the Flava News Radio that's just solely, you know, to play jazz, you know, artists. So it's, you know, but you shared some things maybe in a way that just tweaked it a bit for me to make me really, really think. And, you know, and I think that I will, you know, I'll continue this conversation maybe, you know, possibly with you at some point when you have the time. But it's definitely a conversation I'm going to open up with other people, you know, just to explore and to gain knowledge, you know, about what it is that I think and feel. I'm definitely, for some reason, being drawn into the hip-hop community. It mm-hmm. wasn't something that I had anticipated would happen. You know, nobody mm-hmm. 2 years ago would tell me I would be pushing and promoting Black Stax, you know, mm-hmm. or anything like that, you know. So, and I'm being contacted, you know, all over the place, just like I told you, you know, with Maurice Taylor, you know, contacting me about, you know, sending some music to him and working with him on a project and stuff. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting. 50 years old and, you know, somehow I'm being drawn to this. But it's something that is exciting to me. And mm-hmm. it's something that's worth, you know, understanding to the best mm-hmm. of my ability. And you mm-hmm. did a good job, you know, in educating me today. And I appreciate letting me ask the questions.
Yeah, I want to appreciate your, like, your hunger for knowledge,
uh-huh.
your willingness to learn and to share. And, that's... And you know, what you're giving me is like it's like the highest form of compliment, right? You know, because really it's like it's just communication and conversations, right? And like it's interesting to think, you know, it's like people who are like really good MCs, but like bad interviews. Not to say uh-huh. that it's necessarily like a good interview, right? But not really even bad interview, just like a bad conversation. You know what I mean? Because really, that's what I feel like you're saying is we just had a really good conversation, and through that conversation, like even you know, I walk away with some things that I'm thinking about that things that emerged that were kind of that are already present in my life that you asked me that I am still reflecting on that I will continue to reflect on, and you know, I think that like that spirit, right? Like that spirit of openness and learning, that may be what's drawing you in, because again, it's consistent with the vibration of what hip hop actually is. It's not as consistent with the vibration of what hip hop is projected to be, right? But it's very consistent mm-hmm. with the vibration of what, like the experience that I'm describing, I have. Like what I'm talking about being like being out there, being with the people. It's perfectly with what you're talking about. It's perfectly with how you're describing, you know, how you feel about this conversation about. How you felt about Black Stax and interacting with them, about what you're being attracted to and what's being attracted to you, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
that all makes perfect sense from where I'm sitting.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I make sense to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, but, and it's funny because, again, to come back around to, you mentioned, like, a couple of times you're, like, 50 years old And I just mm-hmm. I'm gonna come back to the middle aged white dude. You know what I mean? Like
right, exactly.
Sometimes it's just that right moment, right? Or that right message. So cool.
And the funny thing is I don't know when you kept telling that story about the middle aged white guy, you know, here it is, I'm, you know, 50 year old, you know, Japanese German girl. You know, raised in the hood, you know, but it was, you know, and I have children, of course, that listen to hip hop and this and that, but it just was, it wasn't something that I took one way or another. It was just something, you know, that it was kind of like in the background, and, you know, once in a while, I hear something, I'm like, oh, you know what, you need to turn that mess off around me, you know, but I'll tell you, my kids have great appreciation for old school, you know, the four tops and the Temptations, you know. but they kind of laugh at me too, you know, that their mother, you know, has evolved into this public figure called Lady Flava, you know. And sometimes they tease me and they're like, could you just be Mom or could you just be Susan right now? You know, why are you Lady Flava? But you know,
that's who I am.
It's my passion. My kids are grown, Shemako. My youngest is 23, right? So it's like, you know, they're off doing their own thing. Let mama do her own thing, you know. But this is something, you know, I tell people all the time, I think this is my form of ministry. I've always been in some form of work that served other people.
Right.
You know, and, you know, my father is a Baptist minister. And so, I just think that I fell into caring for those that have the struggle.
Right.
You know, in one way or another. And so, you know, when it came around to me getting involved with underground independent artists, it's like, you know, it's my thing. But you know what? I think I really found my thing, Shemako. You know, I love doing this. I do. One of these days, I'm going to give me some leopard pom-poms because I love leopard print. That's why you're on the leopard carpet with me tonight. But I'm going to get some leopard pom-poms, and I'm going to be out there just somewhere. You know, I hope to get to the point where I'm traveling around the United States, too, taking my leopard pom-poms so I can just wave them because, like you said, there are some absolutely amazing talents out there that deserve to be recognized.
I definitely want to give shouts out to, like, the Seattle hip-hop scene. You know what I mean? Like, insofar as scenes go, man, it's in my opinion, it's one of the most, like, thriving in the country. And, like, as with all scenes, it has its challenges. But some of the artistry that I've experienced out there is just absolutely phenomenal, you know. We mentioned a couple of them. There's more we could mention. You know, you mentioned Santonio Bandanas. Love Santonio Bandanas. You know what I mean? I mentioned the Alpha P crew earlier. I mean, like, you know, cats like Kazi, Julie C. You know what I mean? Like, that whole squad.
Yeah.
You know, like, like, you know, there's a real, like, thriving kind of youth artistry culture there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Canary Sing. And Infamous, it's something to have pride in, and it's something that I'm glad I got to experience.
Well, I am very proud to represent the Pacific Northwest, and you know I love playing the artists that I receive on my shows. You know that I think that are deserving. You know, of being able to be played on my shows. It's not saying like I'm some big wig or whatever. It's just clearly whatever I'm going to play, I have to believe in it. You know, it doesn't mean that there isn't somebody else out there that's not going to, you know, play their music. It's just for me, I can't do, you know, everybody's music. It just doesn't work for me. But with that, you know, I've been able to, I have a show, I don't know if you know this, Shemako, but I have a show, too, that's being played out of Baltimore that only features Pacific Northwest artists, and it's called Be More Pacific. You know, so I have, you know, 2 hours, you know, of doing a show when I want to that's only Pacific Northwest artists that's being played in Baltimore.
Nice.
You know, just like I've just recently been picked up in March to do 2 shows on a radio station, Reading's Radio in the U.K.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I'm so proud, you know.
And, you know,
I
wanted to say that, like, you said something just now, right? I play music that I believe in. And I want to just real briefly kind of revisit our conversation about Clear Channel, right, and the Telecommunications Act and how the statement you just made, like, that was a part of how music used to be. And, again, you know, TC mentioned the point that there was crime. Yeah, Kat, like, Vanilla Ice wasn't the first dude to get hung out of a window as far as the music industry goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people like you at one point. On, like, people DJed because it was what they wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? And, like, and they had a, you know, DJ, like, even today, like, DJs, when I meet a DJ, right, even a person who spins at a club, they're people who have passion for music, right? And that passion is a reflection of who they are. So the music they have a passion for is a reflection for who they are. And we lose a lot of that in the current radio format we have. We lose the individual expression of the DJ, right? which is where you lose a lot of the individual expression of the local communities and of the independent artists.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think you reflect very well.
And I try. I know that I'm small, but at the same time, I'm kind of large in my own way because there are people paying attention. There are people that are reaching out to me. You know, if they were not paying attention and digging what I was doing, I wouldn't have this radio show in Baltimore playing Pacific Northwest artists. I wouldn't have this, to have the opportunity to have two of my shows streaming over in, the UK, right now. So, I try to represent in a fashion that you guys can be proud to have me help represent you. You know what I mean? And I think that's something that's very, very important. I was having this conversation today with somebody, and I said, because of my Japanese heritage, names is very, very important in the culture. And when you say the last name Koshi, you never know who might know my father, my uncles, whatever. And so it's like, when I step out there, even stepping out there as Lady Flava, if it comes back that I'm a Koshi, I'm representing my family. And so now I take that family that I'm representing to include a Shamako Noble, a Black Stacks, whomever it is that I choose to include, into what I'm doing, I take that so very serious,
right.
I do it to the best of my ability. I'm not perfect by no means. I do love to learn and grow,
mm-hmm.
and this and that, and so, I'm very blessed, with
mm-hmm.
being the age that I'm at to, my children being older. I work with at-risk homeless youth, so that's my
mm-hmm.
thing is homelessness. And stuff. And so I'm very blessed to do so many things in my life right now that I love and I believe in. And,
right.
I really, really thank you for this opportunity, to have you on the show, and to just, you enhanced my day. You enhanced my knowledge. And you've sparked a desire in me to learn and grow even more, within what it is that you're doing and many that are around me are doing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that is, we'll call that a productive day.
We will definitely call that a productive day. So I will.
One little last quick note. In terms of like the, because, we have like kind of category. We're talking about like subgenres, like,
mm-hmm.
Conscious artists, like gangster rappers, whatever. There's a middle ground in there. And so, for instance, I just put out that video, Got Spit, which I forgot to mention. So everybody check out the video. It's called Got Spit.
Okay.
It's all on YouTube. But, like, that was really just me on some, like, MC-ish, right? Like, neither being political nor, like, particularly, like, destructive or angry. You know what I mean? And
uh-huh.
I sort of liken it to, like, I'm a huge Redman fan. I love Redman.
Uh-huh.
Redman, right? He's, like, If not my favorite MC of all time, one of my favorite MCs of all time. And,
uh-huh.
Redman is not a dude I would call politically or socially conscious. He's also not a gangster rapper. He's just tight. You know what I'm saying? He's just tight, and he's just fun, right? And there's an element of that's been lost too, right? Like, just being good at being an MC actually being valuable. You know what I'm saying? I think that's something, for instance, Black Stacks brings to the table, right? They're good at what they do, right?
Right.
And I feel like we're kind of returning to that. I see a lot more, there's just a lot more skills these days in the mainstream, the cats like J. Cole, Drake, Like, we're moving back in that direction. So that's good. But I just want to throw that out there.
I think that there are people that need to stay true to who they feel good about in what they create. I do think
mm-hmm.
that you had touched on earlier, that there are people out there creating because somebody else is making it off of their style. Somehow somebody picked them up and, now they're making the money and getting the recognition. And I think that you don't create because somebody else has created a style and try
right.
to copycat them. I think that you have to know what is your style and be proud of that and stay true to that. you know, and, you know, there are people when I first started doing the radio shows that criticized the way that I was doing it because they, like, you know, Flavor, you should have your questions written out, you should do this, that, and the other, you know, and I'm like, you know what, I've got to do it my way, you know.
Right, I'm sorry, I thought the show was called Lady Flavor Show. I didn't realize that you were producing. My bad,
you know,
I'll check the credits again.
Right. You know, so it's like, okay, maybe you do that on your show.
Right.
But you know what? Obviously, I've been doing it, you know, for going on 2 years now, and I'm getting hit up daily by some artist from somewhere that I don't even know how they found me wanting to come on my show right now, you know, and stuff. And so obviously what I'm doing is right. And one of the things that they say to me is like, you know, Flavor, first of all, you're just comfortable to talk to. You know, I had a jazz artist say, you know, it felt like I was sitting at the kitchen table with you having coffee, you know.
Right.
And I love that. I love that type of compliment because I was like, okay, obviously you're doing something right. It's making it work. It's, you know, I'm able to ask those questions that maybe somebody else may not ask.
Right.
You know, and stuff, and, you know, sometimes, you know, people might feel like, oh, did she really ask me that? But it's something they really wanted to talk about, you know.
Right.
But anyway, you know, I think this, you know, this was a great experience. If you ever want to come back on the show, Shamako, and promote anything that you're doing or whatever, you know, just, you know, charge your phone up, you know. And,
right.
And contact me, and, you know, we can make that happen, definitely. But when you're in Seattle, I'm hoping, you know, that I will have the opportunity, you know, to meet you face-to-face because I would love that. And, you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I can pretty much guarantee you will. Thank you for having me, and you can trust I will be back.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm excited about that. So I'm going to close out the show, Shamako, and play... I don't know. Should I play, Megadinosaurus?
Yeah,
or should I play
good.
The... That's a good one? Okay.
Yeah, that's a good
then
one.
We are going to close...
There's Seattle artists in there. I made that song in Seattle with Seattle people.
Oh. All right. So then we are going to close out today with the Leopard Carpet with Mr. Shamako Noble with a piece called Megadinosaurus. Thank you so much, Shamako.
Thank you, A. Flavor.
All right, baby.
Take care. Peace.
All right.
Some, 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 some
All right, that was Shmuel Noble and several of the Pacific Northwest artists with their piece called Megadinochapasaurus. I want to thank everybody who tuned into the Leopard Carpet Live tonight, to those that hung out in the chat room and those that were hanging out on the phone. I want to thank Miss Dion for hanging out on the phone and Maria Kang for hanging out on the phone and TC for calling in and, you know, and asking and putting some of those hard topics to Shmuel. It was a great experience to just hear that dialogue and to be a part of the dialogue. I encourage anybody and everybody to, you know, come back and check out the archives of this show. It was a great experience for me, and I think that not only with somebody like myself who is new to the hip-hop scene, I think that many of you as listeners of Flavor News Radio can benefit from the conversation that took place today. Take care, God bless, and I will be back tomorrow with another artists on the leopard carpet. Goodbye.